Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Kalmbach Feeds. Join Andy Schneider, National Spokesperson for the USDA APHIS Avian Health Program, Editor-in-Chief of Chicken Whisperer Magazine, and author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, Chicken Fact or Chicken Poop, and Zero Waste Chicken Keeping, as he welcomes top poultry veterinarians, poultry scientists, and poultry nutritionists to discuss the hot topics in the poultry world today, and provide science-based, fact-based, study-based information to help you raise the healthiest poultry possible. And now, here's your host, Andy Schneider.
All righty, happy Thursday to all you awesome listeners out there in Blog Talk Radio land. It is Andy Schneider, also known as the Chicken Whisperer, here for another great episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We got a great show lined up for you today. We have the negative effects of ammonia, and our special guest will be, of course, poultry veterinarian and epidemiologist, Dr. Maurice Petesky out at UC Davis in California. And again, make sure this show will be archived for your listening pleasure. So if you happen to miss something or want to hear it again or share it with others, probably 10 or 15 minutes after the end of the live show, it will be archived into a podcast for you to share. Just a couple of real quick announcements, because of course 'tis the season, and then we'll get right into our show. But first things first, I wanted to remind everybody about a great upcoming event in February of 2020, and that would happen to be Cooptastic 2020.
Are you one of the many Americans that keep backyard poultry? Do you want to give your birds the best care possible? The Chicken Whisperer's Cooptastic 2020 conference will teach you how, plus more, too. Cooptastic will be February 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, 2020 at the beautiful Alabama 4-H Conference Center near Birmingham, Alabama. Educational programs by poultry scientists, veterinarians, and nutritionists, plus fun activities give you an unforgettable experience. Conference packages are available from just for a day to the full experience with meals, entertainment, and lodging. The all-inclusive package is an amazing value at around $300. On-site lodging is limited, so reserve your spot as soon as possible. Visit www.chickenwhisperer.com today for more details.
Alrighty, how cool is that? We have a ton of vendors and a ton of sponsors for this event. A more direct website or a link would be Cooptastic2020.com. That's Cooptastic2020.com. So go check it out, and look, it's just an amazing deal, all-inclusive, and come out and have a lot of fun and a lot of learning. That's Cooptastic 2020, February, I believe it's 21st, 22nd. And the 23rd. If you missed last week's show, I do encourage you to go listen to it. My guest was poultry scientist Dr. McCray at Auburn University, and she was talking all about molting 101. And she did a really good job of myth busting, dispelling a lot of myths out there about molting and all this extra stuff you have to give your chickens and the extra mealworms and the cat food people are throwing at their chickens because they're molting. And so it's a great episode. You can go find it in the archives. It was just last week, and molting 101. You'll learn all about molting, what molting is, the kind of the order that your flock would molt based on your really good layers and your not so good layers, and then of course the time frame of the molt, and then kind of what to do about the molt, if anything. since we know chickens have been molting for thousands of years without human intervention, and they've been doing that successfully. But it was a great show, so go tune in to that show we did last week if you are interested. Let's get on with today's show, The Negative Effects of Ammonia. I'll head over here to the switchboard, and we will bring on our good friend, poultry veterinarian, Dr. Maurice Pateski. Welcome, Maurice. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Great. Good to be here again, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I don't think we've ever dedicated a show over the last decade of just the negative effects of ammonia. It comes up in shows where whether we're talking about good husbandry practices or, foot pad dermatitis and a lot of foot pad issues and the rumors of, you know, oh, my chickens, they got vision problems or going blind because of the ammonia, or how much ammonia is too much ammonia and how do I really know? And then what are some other negative effects? We normally think just of a couple, the foot pad issues, and then, of course, going blind. And I'm sure them inhaling this ammonia from, say, the bedding in their coop can't be good for respiratory issues, too. But mostly it's the foot issues and the eye issues we hear about. But I'm going to turn it over to you, and you can educate us all on, you know, the ammonia kind of, I guess, you know, coming from their waste and getting in that bedding and ventilation and how important is that. But I think at the end of the day, I share with folks that if you walk in a coop and you can smell that ammonia at 5 or 6 feet high off the bedding, then you've got a real issue, because you really, to test this out, probably want to get on your hands and knees or get down there 12 inches above the bedding to see exactly what the birds are experiencing. But I'm sure you'll tell us all about that in this podcast. So thanks for joining us, and I'm going to turn it over to you, my friend.
Great. Well, again, it's great to be here, and it is an important topic, and it's a year-round topic, but it's more of a fall and winter kind of issue, at least in my experience working with commercial producers. So it's definitely a relevant thing to chat about, and it does kind of speak to some of the larger issues on air quality and ventilation, and even going back just straight to the beginning on getting chicks off to a good start. If you don't have good ventilation, if you've got ammonia issues, it will not just affect some of the hawk burns and the foot pad dermatitis and breast blister type issues, and the eyes, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. It'll affect the bird's productivity, their morbidity, which is basically whether they get sick or not. So if you have high ammonia levels, it kind of makes sense that you're going to have a lot of secondary issues, and you're more likely to get infections, more likely to not be as productive, more likely to have your birds get off to a poor start and be more susceptible to other diseases. So it's something that's really, really, really important to think about. And I think, to your point, it's something that probably doesn't get the attention that it deserves. And I think in part it's because you can't really see bad ventilation. It's not one of those things you really see, and I think it's one of those things that can kind of creep up on you pretty quickly, especially during kind of the rainy season, because I think we all, as we enter fall and winter, we all want to hibernate a little more, we all want to stay inside a little more, we don't maybe want to go into our coops as much and do that kind of spring cleaning in the winter when it's just as necessary to do as it is in the spring. So it is one of those things that's kind of a silent thing that we don't really see for all kinds of reasons. You know, you can pick whichever the ones we just described.
And I guess to segue, you're explaining us as the caretakers of the flock not wanting to get out and mess with it, whether it be raining or just it's cold and windy, it's wintertime, and they'll be okay. They've got food and water, but also I guess the chickens that may, in some cases, spend more time in the coop of the run, because as owners, they'll think, oh, it's too cold to let them out, or they'll be fine, it's too windy, or there's 2 feet of snow, we'll just let them stay in that coop, and they may be in the coop longer periods of time than other parts or in other times of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's probably going on as we enter the fall and winter, and to think that we're the only, we're the only animals that kind of hibernate a little more of the two is probably a little naive also. So that's a good point. I hadn't really considered that they're probably spending a little more time also indoors. And the large commercial facilities, to their credit, are really well set up to facilitate ventilation. And they've got some like exquisitely, you know, designed systems that allow, you know, laminar flow, and the ventilation is above the height of the birds, and you can exchange air really well. Those systems, when they're working properly, are really effective, and are only getting better and better and better. And there's, you know, that used to be the main limitation to the size of a commercial poultry facility. So like, what can you ventilate it if you make it, you know, longer and longer and bigger and bigger? And people are getting better and better at that. There's a lot of good engineering that goes into that, a lot of design that goes into that. But for smaller flocks, you know, one of the things that is much more challenging is we don't really have the same ventilation systems. We definitely don't have the same sensors and detectors. So the modern poultry houses, for example, will have ventilation, will have ammonia sensors. And those are great to have, but, you know, even when I look at, you know, data for farms and I see what the ammonia levels are, you still want to fact check it. And you know, for the backyard and small producer, that just means, you know, spending some time, as you kind of alluded to earlier, which I thought was really important, is spending some time in the coop. But also, when it comes to ammonia and all kinds of other things, getting at the level of the birds is a really important thing. So the environment of a coop is a lot different, you know, when you're, you know, 5 feet up in the air, 6 feet up in the air versus when you're, you know, 8 inches off the ground. So it's really important to make sure that the air quality, you can kind of just assess that. And we all obviously have noses. So when it comes to ammonia, we're actually very good as humans at detecting ammonia. So, you know, if you look in the literature, humans, we can look and sense, not look, we can sense ammonia and smell it, and it becomes irritating to us at about 20 parts per million. That's really good, but if you want to, unfortunately, at some levels below that, the damage is already being done. So if you have ammonia levels, for example, at 5 parts per million, which is going to be undetectable to humans, that can start irritating, especially chicks, their respiratory systems. And that's why it's so important to be aware, because the chicks, any kind of problem that you have in birds, it gets really magnified by a magnitude of 10 if you have those problems in chicks. So it is so important to get your birds off to a good start as chicks that if you have any kind of air quality issues, that can have significant effects on all kinds of different aspects of production and disease. So we said the human nose about 20 parts per million, but you can start, especially in chicks, detecting problems at about 5 parts per million. Are you still there? I'm sorry. Hello?
I'm still here. You can hear me okay?
Oh, yep. Yeah, just making sure. Sorry.
Great.
So we said we can start detecting problems if we have literally a level of 5 parts per million. But as you get into that 20 to 25 range, that's when you start having some pretty significant problems. The birds are not as efficient, so they take some more food to make their eggs and their meat. That you start having higher levels of all kinds of interesting diseases, including air sacculitis, which is just an infection of their air sacs, like the bird's version or the additional version of it's an additional component of their lungs. That was one of the things that make them very efficient at gas exchange. They're also more susceptible to viral infections. So as a veterinarian, things like respiratory diseases, like infectious bronchitis, infectious laryngotracheitis, those are viral respiratory diseases, but you also have bacterial respiratory diseases like E. coli and mycoplasma. And there is a lot of literature that suggests that the ammonia levels, as they rise, your bird's immune system gets compromised, they get more stressed. All those things lead to the kind of unintended kind of consequences that we just talked about. And I think most importantly, I'm talking to more and more backyarders that are interested in processing their birds for meat, either their layers that they want to process later on for meat. And one of the things that's really interesting when you process your layer bird, especially because these are older birds, sometimes 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, people are seeing all kinds of interesting things when they are processing the birds. And in the commercial world, we have a lot more condemnations when we have ammonia issues. And the condemnations are birds that are, you know, when they're going down at the processing facility after they've been slaughtered, You have inspectors that are actually looking at those carcasses, and if there's any sign of infection in those carcasses, those birds will be condemned. And I'm getting more and more emails and phone calls, from folks that are seeing all kinds of interesting things in their lungs, in their air sacs, in their gut, and it's really, you know, you have some interesting conversations with people about, like, well, what could that have been from? And especially in older birds, it's almost like looking at kind of like a history of their last 2 or 3, 4, 5 years of life, because you can start, you know, trying to connect the dots to all kinds of issues, including air quality, which I think, as we mentioned, is a significant issue. As we kind of move up, so we talked about the human nose can detect about 20 parts per million, but you can start seeing problems, especially in chicks, at 5 parts per million. But if we really turn up the ammonia levels, to 50 or 100 parts per million, and this is where it's really offensive. Your eyes will kind of burn a little. You'll tear a little. Prolonged exposure to that is especially in the winter months, is not as uncommon, I think, as we probably think it is. In part just because the birds are indoors a little more, we're indoors a little more, we're not doing probably as much outdoors as we should be. And this is when you really start having some problems with what we call corneal ulcers and blindness. So the cornea is that very, very thin tissue that is the outer layer of our eyes and a bird's eyes. And those corneal ulcers can lead to infection. So if you have an ulceration of that corneal tissue, you're literally just having a cut there. And those cells now are damaged, and they're not offering the same protection to the rest of the eye, to all the structures behind it, and that can lead to blindness and infections and things like that. So you will see, at a flock level, you'll see kind of these corneal ulcers, you'll see a lot of tearing, and you'll see some of the kind of common signs of blindness in birds as they're exposed to those levels. And it doesn't take long. There's not a lot of literature on all the different breeds and how long it takes, but it doesn't take long for them to get some of those effects.
Would you see in a quote-unquote typical situation, backyard, since we're talking about it today, or even in the commercial barns, which would you probably see first if you started to have an ammonia issue? Would you see some foot pad issues, because that's maybe have started sooner before the gas started coming up to eye level? Would you see the eye issues first? What normally presents itself first, the eye effects or maybe the foot and hawk effects?
Yeah, and I think I'm going to throw back the question at you, and I think it's going to depend. And unfortunately,
okay, sure.
That's just the reality of how a lot of this stuff works. So if if you have high ammonia levels, so let's say a lot of people don't use rice hulls, or they don't use chopped up straw as a substrate, or excuse me, or wood shavings as a substrate for the birds to walk on. So when you think about how ammonia forms, it's usually formed in the litter by bacterial breakdown of the manure, and those ammonia concentrations can be affected by moisture, high temperatures, overcrowding, poor ventilation. So if we're following that kind of traditional approach, you're probably going to see the contact dermatitis first.
Gotcha.
And
No. I interrupted you, and I just lost track of my mind. But no, you finish up, because then I'll remember what I was going to say. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. I hate when that happens. So that litter quality, and we've talked about litter quality before, but that litter quality is really important, because you will have breast blisters and hawk lesions and hawk burns and contact dermatitis from that contact with that litter that has a high level of ammonia in it, and that litter then should kind of off gas ammonia gas, and then that will typically secondarily produce these corneal ulcers. So typically you'll see the foot pad issues before you'll see the corneal issues, but the foot pad issues are subtle. So there's all these scales. So if you look at like a commercial poultry producer, they'll look at the foot pads and they'll judge them on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being worst. Sometimes for some people, those can be a little more challenging to grade and to visualize. And the, for some reason, that the I've had more people call me recently on the corneal issue than on the foot pad issue, and that just might be something that they're seeing first for some reason, because they're just not looking at the feet of their birds. But it is an interesting question, and I would expect, to your point, all things being equal, the yeah. breast blisters, the hawk burns, and the contact dermatitis to happen first.
And I remember my question is the ammonia. We talk about it being in their manure and in their waste, but is it more urites that are actually they're expelling versus everything else? Is that where most of it's concentrated and coming from? Are the urites in that chicken poop, or is it just across the board in all the material in their fecal matter?
It's just from the nitrogen in their feces, and that nitrogen goes through, I think it goes from like nitrate to nitrite, and then it gets like reduced to ammonia. I'm probably not remembering the actual cycle exactly, but there is kind of a process there, and it depends on how much oxygen or how anaerobic, how little oxygen is in the environment. And that's kind of what dictates, among other things, how much ammonia will form or not form. I think in a perfect world, you want it to form nitrous oxide. So nitrous oxide is the gas, and that's not harmful in the same way that ammonia is. But it can convert itself to ammonia if you don't have enough ventilation, you don't have enough air in there. And that's where we really start talking about, you know, kind of going back to this whole litter management issue. If your litter is not properly cared for, if you have too much moisture in there, if you have too many birds per cubic meter of litter or cubic foot of litter, so you just high too much density in there, you can start having more ammonia problems because that litter is not sufficient, or you have too many birds for the amount of litter that you have. So, you know, litter is really, really important. We have litter as a way to kind of absorb all the off smells, including ammonia, that the birds are producing from their fecal material. And the birds have to do their job. The birds will typically kind of rototill the litter itself just by their natural right. behavior. They'll do all the work for you. So if you have enough litter there, you literally don't need to. I've had people, you know, people are sometimes treat their birds almost too well, and I've had people that will go into the litter and they'll just fish out basically all the poop in that, and I actually don't like that. If the litter is doing its job and the birds are doing their job of mixing the feces in the litter, then you shouldn't have to do anything to your litter at all, aside from if it is like there's a rainstorm and water gets into your coop and gets the litter all wet. Now the bacteria that are producing those ammonia, now those bacteria are proliferating, and they're producing even more ammonia. They're growing and dividing, growing and dividing, growing and dividing, and these are the bacteria that basically poop out ammonia gas, and they would exacerbate that problem. So the general point is you have to take really, really good care of your litter in order to reduce ammonia. You need to have really good ventilation also. And then when you're thinking about, you know, kind of litter management, it's really important, especially in the rainy times of year, to make sure you're not having too much moisture in there. Because you might say during the summer, like, okay, I've got 6 inches or 8 inches or 10 inches of litter, and that's a nice thickness of litter, so it allows the birds to kind of rototill that litter material and kind of compost it, basically. But if you have a huge rainstorm or you have a hole in your coop and water's getting in there, now the bacteria that are producing those ammonia are proliferating, and it's you've changed the equation now. And in that scenario, my recommendation is to get rid of any waterlogged litter and to replace it with brand new litter. And I'm from California, so when we live in we're in Davis, which is in kind of the northern part of the state, right near a lot of rice farms. So rice hulls are really easy for us to get over here. Right. Wood shavings are another great source, but you want of litter material, but you want something that's absorbent. So usually right. we recommend against straw, because straw doesn't really absorb the fecal material and doesn't really allow that fecal material to be decomposed as efficiently as some of these other substrates.
Yeah. I've also heard with straw that because it's straw-like and hollow, that bacteria can then build up within the straw, because it's like a straw with that hollow inside. I've heard folks talk about that possibility, using with straw. Two more questions. I sometimes jump the gun, especially when we're talking about a fascinating subject. And I just tried to Google this, of course, to see if I could find a quick answer. But obviously, from what I just Googled, it looks like ammonia can be in a liquid form and gas form and like other things. But I wondered if you knew, and if you don't, it's quite all right. Probably not a gas expert, but that when the ammonia from that litter, say in the chicken house, chicken coop, does that gas seem to concentrate lower and along the floor, like some gases we know just kind of like to linger lower and stay low, and then some just maybe go up into the atmosphere a lot easier and faster? Do you know if ammonia, what if they have a trait to try to stay low, or does it kind of like maybe another gas seem to just go everywhere and dissipate, go up into the atmosphere and whatnot? I was just curious about that, being, you know, when we talk about the chicks and chickens being so close to the ground, if it's one of those that kind of the gas that congregates and doesn't move a lot and likes to stay low, how much, you know, worse that would be.
So that's a great question. So, and I know a little about this, but not a ton. And if I had to guess, I would say it does not move off the ground, because it's nitrogen is a little heavier than carbon, and it's it can be or N4, which is what ammonia is. N3 and N4 are a little heavier than oxygen, or not? No, they're not heavier than oxygen, but they're definitely heavier than some of the hydrogen gases, for example, or helium. So helium, for example, it's really hard to basically mine helium, because helium, if you don't bottle it up, it's just going to go up into the upper atmosphere. Ammonia, I wouldn't expect it to do that same thing. I would expect it to kind of, you know, for lack of a better word, kind of hang out in our kind of in the lower atmosphere more than I would expect other gases to, for example. But that's a relevant question, and you can, you know, when you think about even the commercial facilities, where you put your ammonia detector is really important. You need to put it at the level of the birds, or else you're detecting ammonia at a point that's not really relevant.
Gotcha. You just gave me a great idea. You were talking about mining. Was it helium? I think you were talking about mining. Is that right?
Yes.
I don't know. It just cracks me up. I think I've got a great project for my 8-year-old son. I'm going to give him a shovel, and I'm going to tell him to go in the backyard and start digging and mine for helium and see what, and then bottle it up if he finds it. That'll keep him busy for hours. get out there and find some helium. My next question, and again, probably would cover this, and it may just be a yes or no, and then we've covered it and we move on. But, and I know the research has probably been done, especially at the commercial level. How much can us as farmers control this ammonia issue with diet, like a particular feed? Like, we know that if this, more of this will create less ammonia, or is it even significant? Have we figured out that, you know, we really can't control it no matter how we mess around with the feed? Or yes, we can develop this feed to help reduce the ammonia in the waste.
So this is a challenging topic, because in the commercial world, feed is the most expensive operating cost you have, right? So the data, if you talk to most farmers and you look at, you know, most ag economists, when they pencil out how much feed costs for a broiler flock or a layer flock, it's usually, you know, 60, 70, 75% of their operating costs. And what's the most expensive part of the feed? It's the protein. And what's protein made of? Protein's made of nitrogen. And so if you feed too much nitrogen, what happens to any animal is they basically poop it out. So what you want to do when you talk to, you know, broiler and layer nutritionists and dairy nutritionists and beef nutritionists is that what they're trying to do is basically optimize the amount of nitrogen they're giving. So in animals that are young, you usually have a very high protein diet. And then as they get older, you reduce the protein and increase the energy, especially in layer breeds, for example. And the goal is to not waste money on nitrogen. So you don't want to have nitrogen that they're eating and then pooping out because they're not utilizing it. And there's a gazillion reasons why they might not utilize it. So it's not just the amount of protein, but is it digestible and all these other types of things that nutritionists are really clever at. So to answer your question, in the commercial world, absolutely. Like, they can kind of mix and match and make sure that your ins and outs are kind of, you know, mass balancing out. But in the non-commercial world, we only have one layer ration and one grower ration for if you have layers or broilers. So we end up wasting a lot of nitrogen, and in the backyard world or in the very small commercial world, you don't have that kind of flexibility to really optimize the amount of nitrogen. So those birds are definitely pooping out more nitrogen than they probably should be as they get older, because you're giving them a high nitrogen diet when they're, let's say, you know, still when they're still pullets, they're not layers yet, but you haven't really optimized the amount of nitrogen they get. So it's a really good question. I think, unfortunately, from a practical perspective, we don't have the, you know, for broilers, you're talking about four or five different types of rations that they'll get in their lifetime. And for layers, you know, something similar to that, depending on the farm. So we don't, for layers and broilers in the backyard and small world, or in small commercial world, we're usually talking about two different rations, you know, a chick ration / pullet ration, and then a layer or finisher type ration if we're dealing with broilers. So there's a lot of excess nitrogen that gets wasted there, to your point. But it's a really good question.
Cool. Hey, let me go to commercial break. It's a half past the hour, and we'll go ahead and do that. And then we come back, I'll stop asking questions. But it never fails. We have a really fascinating topic. The questions just start popping up in my head, and I'm like, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole here or there. But I try to keep them pertinent, and hope sometimes they're a yes or no, and then sometimes they are would warrant another show. But thanks for answering those for me as they pop into my head. Folks, we are talking with, there we go. We're talking with poultry veterinarian Dr. Maurice Petesky from UC Davis. Our topic today, the negative effects of ammonia. And we just are really scratching the surface. So I've got to go to commercial break. And when we return, there'll be much, much more for us to enjoy, to learn about the negative effects of ammonia. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialists. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of quality incubators for almost 40 years. They manufacture incubators that hold anywhere from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity controls and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and receive 10% off your entire order. Order your new incubator today at Brensea.com. That's Brinsea.com. Cackle Hatchery is a third-generation, family-owned and operated hatchery. They offer over 193 varieties of poultry shipped directly from their facility in Missouri. It's their mission to enhance your life by providing you with quality poultry for showing, meat, enjoyment, eggs, and pets. They specialize in hatching purebred poultry and shipping day-old chicks right to your local post office since 1936. 4-H and FFA Youth Poultry Clubs get a 10% discount. Check out their website, CackleHatchery.com, for posted weekly specials and discounts. That's CackleHatchery.com.
At Kalmbach Feeds, our layer pellets and crumbles are all natural, antibiotic-free, with no animal byproducts. Formulated just for laying hens, our feed is fortified with essential amino acids and calcium to ensure maximum production of nutritious, tasty, strong-shelled eggs. From our family to yours, feed your hens the way nature intended. Pure, wholesome goodness. Kalmbach Feeds. Find a dealer at kalmbachfeeds.com. That's KALMBACH feeds.com. Or order your layer pellets and crumbles today on Amazon.com. Kalmbach Feeds is a proud sponsor of the Chicken Whisperer.
Metzer Farms is now hatching and shipping the premier egg layer. This girl is consistently laying jumbo eggs with a higher nutrient density and lower water content than your eggs now. She is an extremely hardy bird and the most heat and cold tolerant egg layer available, allowing for year-round outdoor production. An eggshell unmatched in sturdiness and thickness, making cracks a thing of the past. Increase your health and double your egg profits. Of course, we're talking about ducks. Duck eggs are revered by chefs for their succulent flavor and by bakers for being the better baking egg. Learn more about this extraordinary duck, the Golden 300, or any of our other 35-plus breeds of ducks and geese at MetzerFarms.com and order your next flock from us.
And now we return to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer with your host, Andy Schneider.
Alrighty, I've got a special announcement for everybody. I may have hinted to this last week on the episode, but I actually have it in my hands right now as we speak, this brand new product. Well, actually, it's a continuation of a new product that's been out now for about 9 months. But everybody who listens to the show and have watched my live videos, y'all are familiar with the product called Chick Fresh. And when they released that, it came in a 24-ounce spray bottle. And when we got it here at the farm to use, before it even became public, you saw me use it black label. And where I was kind of skeptical, you could see that in my face and in my voice when we got it shipped to us and we started using it. And but you saw all of that change as we continued to use it here on the farm. And now it's actually become a staple here, where we have it hanging in our multiple coops. We have it actually under our kitchen sink where I spray the cat litter box, and where I'm going to spray our kitchen garbage can with it. I've sprayed my nasty farm truck with it, the along the floorboard and whatnot, because there's like a bazillion uses for this. But the exciting news is, those of you who are already fans, you don't need me to tell you how awesome and well the product works, because you've already experienced that. So if you're familiar with the product, definitely you want to check it out. That would be a start. But those of you who are already using this and have seen the benefits of Chick Fresh, they just came out with, it just hit Amazon this week, Chick Fresh Odor Control Spray Concentrated. So let me tell you, those of you who are already using this product and already love it, and it is a now staple at your farm or homestead, you're used to paying about $12 for a 24-ounce spray bottle, which should last for the average backyard keeper about a month, 10 to 15 sprays each day, and that's going to get you through about a month's time for the $12 a bottle. And then it runs out, and you go and buy another bottle for $12. Maybe you even went to Amazon and bought that two-bottle special where you save about $4 when you buy two at a time. But now it's actually in a concentrated little bottle. It's 4 fluid ounces. And here's the cool part. You ready for this? It actually makes 5 of those 24-ounce bottles. So if you're used to already using Chick Fresh, that 24-ounce bottle, this little 4-ounce concentrate will make 5 of those 24-ounce bottles. And you ready for this? This concentrate, I believe, is only $24.95 right now, $24.95. So that brings the cost of that bottle. For those of you who are already using this and using it and loving it and paying $12 a bottle, save those bottles. Use the concentrate. It brings the cost down to under $5 a bottle. I think it comes out literally to $4.99 a bottle if you use the concentrate, so not 12. So how cool is that, that this company was selling you an awesome product for $12 a bottle, but they're willing now to put this in a concentrate for you where you can continue to use it at $4.99 a bottle. But it's an odor control spray. It's definitely relative to what we're talking about today, with the negative effects of ammonia. It's absolutely all natural, and it is amazing. We went from really being kind of skeptical when we started using this over a year ago to now we have it all over the farm, and you will too. So check out. Don't take my word for it. Go to Amazon. Check out the reviews. Type in Chick Fresh Odor Control Spray. Also, they've got right now a 20% off, so now it's down to like $4 a bottle instead of $4.99 at chickfresh.com. So I just wanted to share that with you because it is related to, again, today's show, the negative effects of ammonia with our good friend Dr. Pateski. Also, the fact that this just came out this week, which is fantastic news for everybody that's already using it. And those of you who have, I want to try it, but, you know, $12 a bottle is $12 a bottle. Now we're under $5 a bottle. And it is a fabulous deal. Chick Fresh Odor Control Spray. Check them out on Amazon or go to chickfresh.com if you want that 20% off special right now. 20% off at chickfresh.com. Let's get back to our show, The Negative Effects of Ammonia. And we're talking with poultry veterinarian Dr. Maurice Pateski. So I'm going to turn it over to you. I'm going to try to, if I have questions, write them down and kind of towards the end so you can move on with your outline there because I'm bad about forgetting things. So I'll just kind of write these down if I have them, and we'll cover them at the end. So I'll let you continue for us. Thanks so much.
I'm the same way, Andy, so I completely appreciate that. Feel free to ask questions during. I'm totally fine with that if you get the inspiration and you get excited. I do the same thing. So.
Will do.
I'd be hypocrite if I got mad about it. So I did some math during the break, and so oxygen is has a molecular weight. If we all remember back to our high school chemistry class of 16, and ammonia's got a molecular weight of 17, so they're about the same molecular weight. Carbon dioxide's a little heavier because it's got two oxygens in it. But my point is that it will hang out kind of at a lower level. It's not going to be like helium or hydrogen gas and just go straight into the upper atmosphere. So that's really, I just wanted to point that out, that it's not, it can get absorbed into clouds and things like that. I was reading during the break about all the different places they find ammonia on our planet, but it is heavier. So, like I said, things like hydrogen and helium are notorious for being hard to capture and to mine because they will escape on you. Actually, just on one quick side note, because I love non sequiturs, spacesuits, they pump helium through them to do leak checks, because the helium will escape. It tries to escape the fastest of any gas, like helium and hydrogen. So helium is really used in the space industry, and among other things, just to do leak checks on all kinds of different equipment, including spacesuits. So just
cool.
A quick tidbit of information there.
Yeah,
so a couple things I wanted to point out. So we did talk a little about, what the corneal ulcers will kind of look like, but I wanted to also describe what the foot pad dermatitis looks like, because that is also a common thing to see. And I think that the point that I wanted to make is that when you are looking, let's say you don't smell ammonia and you're like, I've never had an ammonia issue. Well, you don't really know that, obviously, until you make a true assessment of the entire coop. It's not just about getting down to the bird's level and, taking a sniff and saying, well, it must be below 20 parts per million. The proof is really in how are the birds doing. And one of the best ways to assess how the birds are doing is kind of assessing their feet and looking at their foot pads. So you will see... these either small lesions or cuts on the bottom of their feet, or you'll see what we call hyperkeratosis, which is this thickening of their feet and their foot pads. And you can also see what are called breast blisters, and those are just these smaller, right at their kind of keel bone, right at their breast bone, you'll see little ulcers or blisters where the feathers will actually almost be all rubbed off, and you'll see almost what looks like a little scab over there. And it's important to know that when they get these contact burns from the ammonia, the high concentrations of ammonia, because ammonia can be a liquid or it could be a gas, and it can off-gas from that liquid. But as they have that contact with that litter material that has higher concentrations of ammonia in it, that's when they'll get that those breast blisters, that thickening of the skin around their feet, those little lesions in their feet, and that can cause all kinds of other problems. They're not going to be as comfortable on perches if you guys use perches, which are really important from a welfare and behavior perspective. And it's also, it can contribute to, they can get bacterial infections. So all the feet issues with birds, that's part of kind of that complex and trying to figure out how they're getting those problems is really important. Is it related to the environment? Is it related to The nesting bar has slivers in it, and that's how they're getting bumblefoot, for example. So bumblefoot, if you guys remember, is this kind of infection of the feet, and that infection can happen secondarily to high ammonia concentrations, which are causing these foot pad lesions, which are then leading to bumblefoot. So that's why it's really important when you do talk to veterinarians. In a perfect world, your veterinarian would come out to your coop and would make an assessment. But in a non-perfect world, you know, people have to bring their chickens into their veterinary hospital. And when they do that, you know, if the problem is bumblefoot, for example, it's really important for the veterinarian to kind of figure out, okay, what's the source of the bumblefoot? Because birds just don't get bumblefoot on their own, and is the source, like, are we dealing with a issue with the design or the material that was used in the nesting bar, or are we dealing with the problem of ammonia, for example?
Mm-hmm. I guess it would be safe to say this when you're talking all this, and things go through my brain here, and I guess if you a scenario to kind of paint a picture, if you had that soccer mom in suburbia who had the beautiful lush green backyard, and she had a really nice chicken tractor, and she was very meticulous about, regardless what the weather is, every single day moving that one rotation through her entire backyard, she would probably, I guess it would make sense, have a much less instance of dealing with the effects of ammonia, because she's got a fresh bed of bedding, that grass in that run for that coop every single day. Or if somebody, say, maybe free ranges, you know, the chickens are out at the crack of dawn and they go back into this particular coop at night, they go up on their roost, yeah, there'll be the collection of waste underneath those roost, and then at the night and the day they head on out, may see less effects, say, of ammonia issues. Then again, someone who has that backyard where they have the 6x8 coop, and then they have that attached 8x15 run or 8x12 run next to it, and that's essentially the only space that those chickens see. I guess that would be a safe assumption, wouldn't it, in those scenarios?
No, I agree. I mean, I think if I understand your question, you're saying, you know, how common is this problem in, you know, most of the backyard worlds where the environment is probably not as conducive to supporting ammonia production, and it's kind of get moved around just by normal ventilation and the birds spending half their day inside, half their day outside. And I think you're right. I get enough, I'd say, you know, of all the calls I get every month or so from backyarders in California and kind of the western states and beyond, I'd say I get one or two calls out of the maybe 10 calls I receive. Maybe one or two calls every 2 months or so. So it's something that pops up, but it's not the first and foremost kind of thing that pops up. But it does pop up, and maybe it's because, you know, the when, especially this time of year, you do get these spikes in ammonia production a little more because of, you know, human behavior, because of the birds' behavior. And the one thing I have noticed when it comes to backyard birds, though, is that the ventilation in the houses is usually really poor. So even though they're not spending much time in there, even though there's not a lot of buildup of manure, which is one of the precursor ingredients to, along with the litter, to get that bacterial breakdown to form ammonia, even though we don't have a lot of that, we don't have very good ventilation in a lot of those coops. We might have a window, but the window has glass on it. We don't have any air inlets at the eaves of the coops or anything like that. So there isn't the best ventilation in there. And it's important for people to kind of try to optimize that. I think where people start running into problems is that they have a hole in the roof, there's some litter material in there, there's a leak in the roof, and then that's when you start getting this, you know, you've gone from this nice environment to a slightly more, you know, kind of toxic environment, if you will. And that's where, you know, in the commercial world, we talk about creating negative pressure in the house itself. And by creating negative pressure with fans, with exhaust fans, then we can bring that outside air then is going to be sucked into the house, and you're going to create this kind of circular airflow. And you can do that really effectively, when you create this negative pressure. It's a little harder to do that in these, you know, coops that are, designed and built, you know, with all kinds of different, you know, kind of factors in there. So in that scenario, and you want to make sure also you're keeping predators out also. So, I don't want anyone to kind of listen to this and say, well, I'm going to open up my doors all night long now. That would be the worst possible thing. Or my windows all night long, and we're going to have rodents and stuff in there. So, there's this balancing act that we have to think about. So if we are going to put, some kind of ventilation in the house, we need to make sure that we're using some kind of appropriate type of fencing, like hardware cloth, to make sure that, sure, we're allowing air to come in at the eaves of the house, but we're not just having a gap there, right, where not mice and birds and things like that can come in there. So that's really important. It's also important, don't put a fan, and we've talked about this a little before, and say, okay, we need ventilation, so I'm going to put a fan right at the level of the birds. Birds actually don't like air being blown on them, especially chicks. We think about chicks and birds in general. Food, water, and temperature, those are the big three that we want to kind of optimize. The temperature and the air kind of go hand in hand with each other. So it's really important to, if you are going to try to put some kind of fan to move the air in some kind of fashion, doesn't have to be this nice, beautiful laminar flow systems that we have in these huge, 100-meter poultry barns, but you can certainly put, like I said, you can open up some eaves or have some windows that are open, but also have that hardware cloth to protect from any mice or other predators or wildlife from getting in. And, that just air in those, 10 or in those like 50 square foot or 100 square foot spaces, you probably don't need a fan unless you had a lot of moisture in there. So having some air get in there is really important in the evening when the birds are in there. In the day, you should be able to open up that door or have some kind of door open to ventilate. Right. But I think in the evening, the one thing I've seen is that when I talk to people on the phone is that it'll be wintertime, they'll have some rain come in from a hole. They won't have good ventilation in the evening, and that's when it'll kind of lead to this kind of some of these issues, whether it's a respiratory disease, that's the first thing, whether there's some kind of a foot pad dermatitis issue, whether there's some kind of ulceration of their corneas and their birds are going a little blind. Those are usually the things that kind of contribute to this kind of big picture ventilation issue. But we just want to make sure that we're thinking not just about ventilation and then disregarding biosecurity with respect to predators and wildlife, or disregarding bird welfare with respect to putting a fan at the bird's level. So we want to move the air probably a foot off the ground, a foot and a half off the ground. And then if we can move that air just a little, just by having a window with some hardware cloth on it, I know it's not as aesthetically pleasing. It makes our coops look like prisons a little. But if we can do that, if we can just have some air that just kind of flows in there, the nights are always windier than the days typically. So if we can do those type of things, I think that's a big step forward as far as just preventing this. And as we said before, the most important thing with poultry, especially, we don't have a lot of cures for foot pad dermatitis, right? We do have antibiotics and things like that, but getting the antibiotics at the levels we need it in the feed is really hard. Corneal ulcers, we don't have cures for that in poultry. The respiratory infections and diseases and problems that we get in chicks, there's no cure for that. So this is really where we don't want to get to that point, because we want to think about prevention, and prevention is really just about having some ventilation, and it's about litter management, making sure our litter is good quality, it's not too moist. When you pick up the litter, you should be able to pick it up and form it into kind of a ball, and it should crumble really easily. If it's really wet and you can crumble it into the equivalent of a snowball and throw it at a wall, then that's way too wet. If on the other side, if your litter material is very dry, that's not good for the birds or for you or your kids. So there are, air quality issues you want to think about. And this is not just the ammonia, it's not just a bird issue. It's also a public health issue also, because we do spend a decent amount of time in our coops.
Now, everything that you've described so far about bedding, and longtime listeners, this is no surprise, because we've talked about this a lot with bedding and coops and runs, and also in brooders, and it's also in
the Chicken Fact or Chicken Poop book that you were a major contributor in. But so far during this entire show, it sounds like, again, we found kind of another negative to using sand as bedding in the coop. It's not absorbent. It's not soft. You can't form it into that ball. It's, you know, it can stick to the chicken's feet when they then jump up to the roost. And then now they're sliding or twisting their feet on that roost when they fly up there with sand particles on their feet. And, of course, you think you go to the beach and you put your hand in the sand and then grab a wooden dowel, grab it really tight and twist your hand. That can cause abrasions, and over time that can lead to that bumblefoot. So again, so far in all of this show, we've everything you've described about bedding, it kind of leans again to more a negative effect for using sand in your coop, which is over the last couple of 3 years has become a, for whatever reason, a popular choice with some backyarders.
Yeah, I think the sand is probably almost like a people thinking that like cat litter is very similar
right.
to sand. They should be able to use the same kind of material potentially. But I agree, sand is not ideal as far as all the other options that people have, and probably a little harder to work with too. But I think some people that use sand almost treat it like a litter box, which
right.
I don't think they need to do that actually.
Yeah.
If you effectively use your rice hulls or your chopped up wood shavings, you shouldn't have to change the litter at all, really, as long as you're not having anything significant with respect to rain events, for example.
Right. Excellent. Yeah, I agree. And we use that example, you know, as using that sand as a litter box with someone who has time every single day to go out and meticulously scoop those little individual mounds of poop from those birds, I mean, every single day. And I think that's, again, the point they're trying to accomplish with that. I agree. So it's been about 25 minutes, believe it or not, since our last break. So let me go ahead and get this squeeze in the second commercial break. And then when we come back, we will have Dr. Pateski continue with the negative effects of ammonia and wrap it up. So we're going to break. Stay with us. We'll be back right after this. Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Since 1921, Stromberg's has been a family-owned and operated business providing quality poultry and poultry supplies to their customers. Today, the Stromberg's family offers over 200 different breeds of poultry, including chickens, waterfowl, and game birds. They also offer poultry supplies for both the beginner and experienced poultry keeper. Stromberg should be on the top of your list when it's time to order your new day-old baby chicks and poultry supplies. Order online today at StrombergsChickens.com. That's StrombergsChickens.com.
Sweet PDZ has been keeping horse stalls ammonia-free and healthy for nearly 33 years. However, ammonia is ammonia, regardless of the species producing it. Therefore, it will do the same great job in your chicken coops and brooders. Sweet PDZ safeguards flock health by neutralizing and eliminating harmful levels of ammonia and odors. Safe and effective moisture absorption. All natural, non-toxic, premium grade zeolite mineral. Contains no masking scents or chemical perfumes. Safe and beneficial to dispose with waste on compost and gardens. Learn more at sweetpdz.com. That's sweetpdz.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
And now we return to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer with your host, Andy Schneider.
Alrighty. One of the reasons why this topic for me today is so interesting is that literally for the last maybe year and a half on the farm here, we've been doing really extensive studies in using odor control products. We've been using, you just heard their commercial, Sweet PDZ, for well over a decade, long before the podcast was around, long before, and the podcast has been around for 10 years, 11 years, long before they were sponsored. We've been using that, of course, in our coops and in our rabbit hutches and everywhere else, hogs and everything else. So we've used the Sweet PDZ to try to eliminate that ammonia odor as well. So we've been testing that here along with the Chick Fresh that we've been testing for about 18 months now. And we tested it before it became on the market. And then we've been testing a odor control shavings that's actually not even on the market yet. We've been testing that for almost 2 years because they keep changing and developing it to make it the best it can be. It was a little bit too fine. The shavings were too fine, the first samples we got. And then they were using a different odor and ammonia control, I guess, ingredient. Then they made the shavings bigger and they changed it. They started actually infusing the shavings with this ammonia control and odor control ingredient, and we've used that on many occasions in coops to try to see. And then we measure the days and what our eyes and our nose see. We even did a study which was really fascinating as well. We called it the triple whammy, where we used all three. We said, okay, we just used good old standard plain old pine wood shavings from Tractor Supply. So we made sure that the medium was all the same based on all these different odor control products we used, unless we were using those odor control shavings. But then we did the triple whammy, where we actually put down a nice layer of Sweet PDZ on the coop floor. And then we put in the odor control shavings on top of that, several inches. And then every single day we went out to collect the eggs, we would spray that with the Coop Fresh and see if we could get, you know, if we're using all three of these products, how long before our nose tells us we need to change this bedding out. So we're all, at least over the last 18 months, we are knee deep in this, no pun intended, in these negative effects of ammonia, and try to how to eliminate that. And a lot of companies over the last 2 years have been just really developing a lot of different ways to help the small flock keeper deal with the not just the ammonia but the odor, and we've tested them all here. So all this is extra fascinating for me today. So thanks for bearing with me and all the questions I've had for Dr. Pateski. We're gonna turn it back over to Doc, and we're gonna let him kind of make sure on his outline he's completed everything he wanted to convey to us. I'll see if I have any other questions on my list here, and then we'll wrap it up. We want to make sure Dr. Pateski has all the time he needs to finish, especially the important things he wanted to get across to us during the show today, Doc.
Yeah, well, I think we're kind of in lockstep today, because the last thing I was going to mention was I wanted to talk a little about some of the litter treatments that you can use that will actually reduce ammonia emissions.
Great.
So these are used very often in the commercial industry, and they're used for all kinds of reasons. I mean, sometimes it is, you know, California, we've had some pretty bad droughts in the last decade or so we don't have as much rice production. If we don't have as much rice production, we don't have as many rice hulls. We don't have as many rice hulls. It's really hard to change out your litter, even if you did have some ammonia issues. So some producers will add some of these chemicals to their litter to basically what they end up doing is they end up just increasing the pH of the litter. And by decreasing the pH of the litter, I'm thinking backwards, by decreasing the litter of the pH, you end up reducing the amount of ammonia, so you can actually increase the amount of nitrous oxide that ends up being produced, which is harmless for the birds and for our health. So there are some commercial products, and you kind of mentioned them, and I'm not going to go into all the different products.
Sure.
And advantages and disadvantages, but I think for our purposes, you know, I kind of wanted to mention this last because I didn't think it was the most important thing for people to focus on. But would there be a scenario potentially where, you know, someone wasn't able to get a hold of litter at all? They still had their litter. It was a little wetter than they wanted it to be. they had an ammonia issue. In that scenario, sure, you know, we could certainly talk about using some of those types of materials. But the first and foremost thing that I, you know, want people to kind of remember is just to think about the ventilation issue. So how can they, you know, redesign their coop, cut a window in there and put some hardware cloth just to allow some natural airflow, make sure during the day that they're opening it up, getting some air ventilation that way, and then just managing their litter material as best as possible. I know there's a lot of people out there that are like, well, we don't use litter at all. We just have a dirt pad, for example.
Uh-huh.
And that's fine. It's not ideal because now you don't have that manure itself is not getting broken down. It's not getting decomposed at all. There's no carbon in there. So you're not going through any kind of composting process. From a behavioral and welfare perspective, the birds do like that litter material. It kind of gives them something to entertain themselves when they're kind of rototilling that litter material. It's not the end of the world. You know, I'm a big fan of don't make perfect the enemy of good. Good is great. It's not perfect, but it's if you're doing a good job, then you're doing a better job than a lot of people. So if you don't have litter material and things are going fine and you don't have any of those ulcerations or cuts on the feet or the hocks, and your birds seem happy and healthy, then maybe there's not, you have, you know, a handful of birds in a wide open space and the birds are making everything work. So in that scenario, I'd be hard pressed to tell you, well, you need to have litter here, or else you're going to have this problem and this problem. If you haven't had those problems for months or years, then I'm not going to, you know, if the saying goes, don't break it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I'd certainly follow that recommendation there. But I think the ventilation issue is really important to talk about. And this is really important for people that are going to hatch their own chicks. Chicks are so fragile for the first week or two. And however they're raised that first week or two is so important with how they're going to do for the rest of their life, their lifespan. So at the beginning, investing in, you know, all the right types of accoutrements to make sure your chicks are healthy with respect to brooding lamps the temperature and making sure that you do have litter material for the chicks is actually really, really important. As they get older, they get a little more self-sufficient, but at a younger age, I can't stress how important it is to manage ammonia at a young age.
I'm glad you mentioned that too, because I always, when we're talking about these, say, odor control products, odor control sprays, or the Sweet PDZ, like I said, the Sweet PDZ works totally different scientifically than the Chick Fresh odor control spray, and so they work differently. You can use them both. We use them both here, or you can use one or the other, whichever best works for you. But I completely agree. I follow all that up when we're talking about odor control in my videos when we're testing this stuff. Is that this is not a product for you to be lazy but say, well, I'm not going to clean my coop like I should, I'm not going to pay attention to ammonia, I'm not going to, so yeah, it's a tool to help eliminate some of the effects of ammonia and make things smell a little bit better for you when you're out there, your guests coming over, or whatever it may be. But always this is not a excuse not to have good husbandry practices, good biosecurity, like you said, and fixing that leak where you've got water blow in or whatever, ventilation. We always stress ventilation even in the wintertime, and I think we'll stress that one more time here because it's upon us that in the wintertime, again, it's equally if not more important to have that good ventilated coop. No drafts, but ventilation. And how I personally kind of differentiate between, because people will say, no drafts, but good ventilation. What gives? How do you explain that one, Andy? And I'm like, you know, for the most part, I'll say, you know, go out to your coop after dark, after your chickens have gone to roost with a flashlight, and look at them while they're up on that roost. And if their feathers are moving, well, guess what? That's a draft. Find out where that draft's coming from, block it off. And that means you may have to create more ventilation somewhere else to continue having good air exchange and good ventilation, but you don't want that draft. And I'm so glad you said it again on the show.
Because it helps me when you and Dr. McRae and all, everybody else comes on and says these things. I'm like, ah, okay, good. It reassures me that I've been sharing the right information with everybody about the fan, about the fans. Like, no, you don't want a fan on your birds all night long. I mean, it's just not, it's not going to be good for them. It's not healthy for them. If you put a fan in there, a smaller fan, you know, above, below, whatever, but just not constantly on them all day. I mean, all night long, because it, it still gets, it gets cool at night, and they have that cold breeze on them all night long. So I'm so glad you, you mentioned that in the show today too, so I can continue to reassure people about that tidbit of information.
Yep, no, I completely agree. It's nice when we all agree on something, which in science we love to disagree with each other. Even when we agree with each other, we love to disagree.
Oh my goodness, that's absolutely true, isn't it? So, well, thanks for another great show. Fascinating for me because of this last year and a half or so, we've been doing all this odor control product testing, from the shavings to everything like that. So it's great. And then, of course, I didn't even, I'll be the first one to say, I didn't think about it being tis the season when you first came on and said, it's tis the season. We're starting to get into the colder and winter months. And this, this where I see a lot of phone calls and see this more often than maybe when I was thinking, maybe in the hot summer months when we see this. So thanks for sharing that with us as well. That never entered my thought process before the show. So, but thanks for coming on as always, and we will see you again next month. I can't believe the next time you come on, it'll be a couple of weeks before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I know. Crazy.
Absolutely crazy. But thanks, Dr. Pateski, for coming on. Thanks for sharing all the great information with us today.
Great. Thanks again, Andy. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to wrap it up. What a great show, The Negative Effects of Ammonia. And continue to follow the show. I got a phone call this week from somebody who is interested in being a sponsor with Chicken Whisperer LLC. And they said, you know, I absolutely love your podcast. It is absolutely amazing. It is informative. It is educational. It is enjoyable. You've got humor involved in there a little bit. Yeah, we hear laughing. But most of all, we love the fact-based, science-based, study-based information that, that your guests share every single episode. So we hope you will continue to listen every Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, live. And then, of course, we do the podcast a few minutes after the show ends. So if you tuned in late today, no worries. You'll be able to listen to the podcast in full here in just a few minutes. So we're glad you're listening. Also, go over and subscribe to the totally free digital edition of Chicken Whisperer Magazine. Just go to chickenwhisperermagazine.com. And let me see. Here we go. And it's free to subscribe to the digital edition. We'll email it to you four times every single year. If you want the print edition, it's $9.95 a year. And Dr. Pateski is one of our regular contributors for that, as well as poultry scientist Dr. McRae, as well as poultry scientist Zach Williams. So thanks for tuning in today. We'll see you next week right here on Blog Talk Radio.
This has been Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, with your host, Andy Schneider. For more information, find us on the web at chickenwhisperer.com, on Facebook by typing in The Chicken Whisperer, on Twitter at Backyard Poultry, and on Instagram at The Real Chicken Whisperer. Thanks for listening.